Hey, I'm Dale Earnhardt Jr., and you're listening to Life Minute TV.
Dale Earnhardt Jr. takes it.
NASCAR legend Dale Earnhardt Jr. knows a thing or two about keeping heated emotions in check behind the wheel, and he's parlayed those skills into his latest children's book to help parents teach their kids how to control their emotions when things go wrong. We caught up with this busy dad of two to hear all about what fuels his winning drive on and off the track. This is a Life Minute with Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Dale Earnhardt Jr. in the house. Thank you so much for joining us on Life Minute.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. It's not often I get a chance to come up to New York and visit, so it's been a fun morning.
What have you done so far while you're in the city?
Yesterday I met Eli Manning and got to do his podcast or his show, and that was a lot of fun. We went to a bookstore and walked around a little bit and had some laughs, but this morning did some morning shows, Good Morning America and so forth.
Nice.
The Today Show. So that's always exciting. Feel very fortunate.
Awesome.
So yeah,
love
gonna,
it.
Gonna enjoy the city just for a little bit and then go back home.
So tell us about your new book.
Yeah, so I've wrote a few books in my time, but here lately we've been writing children's books, and the main character in our children's books is Buster. Buster's my dad's nickname when he was a little boy. And so I thought that'd be a great name for a lead character in a children's book. And I recently became a father, so that was the inspiration for being curious about writing a book. Could I write one? How fun would that be? What would that be like? And would my kids like it? And those sound like fun challenges to take on. And so this is the second installment of Buster's series. As Buster Gets Back on Track is the name of the book. And it's a book about managing emotions. One of the things, when I became a father, you know, that everything's new. You're learning everything as a parent. And one of the things that sort of surprised me was watching my daughter, Isla, our first kid, manage her emotions, having a hard time controlling her emotions, right? And getting frustrated by inability to communicate to us what she was feeling. Simple things. But this is kind of the driving storyline of the book is Buster managing his emotions. You know, he struggles on the racetrack and gets frustrated, and then he finds ways to control that. And there's a, you know, that's kind of the main message of the book. But it's been interesting. I will say that when I became a dad, one of the most common gifts that you'll get as a parent is books, children's books for your kids, right? And so we compile this big collection of books, and it was, I thought we were going to read them all, right? But the girls just gravitate toward the specific ones, and they will have you read the same book every day for weeks on end, right? And I'm thinking, man, I wonder if I can create a book that they want me to read to them. And so that was, or, you know, and even if my girls don't connect to Buster, maybe someone will, maybe some child will become a fan of Buster. And so that's been an incredible experience to watch the feedback from the book.
That's so great. Yeah. And I understand some of the pictures are a nod to your real life and obviously some of the strategies.
That's right. So, one of the unexpected, enjoying things about writing this has been connecting it to my personal life. And you can do anything when you're writing a children's book. You create the characters yourself. You work with an illustrator, and we chose an incredible illustrator to help us with our book. We love the design, the colors, everything about Buster's character. And so the car that Buster is I basically have this car that my dad raced when he was starting his career in the 70s. And I said, I would love this car to, you know, Buster in this car to have some consistency here. And so you can take things in your life or relationships in your life and incorporate those into the book. And it's been really fun to go and say, hey, this character, go to your friends and say, this character is you. You inspired this particular person in the book, and you imagine that they're then going to grab the book and want to read it to see what their character does. And so that's been really fun for me. And hopefully we can continue the series and Buster, you know, the only thing is I think I want to do a toddler book. They're little thick cardboard toddler books, way less words, but trying to connect to a 2 or 2.5 year old child with a toddler book, and would be a lot of fun for me. So maybe that'd be a new chapter for Buster.
That's so cool. Yeah. How do you manage everything, you know, work and family?
I have a lot of great people that help me know where I need to be at all times. And I trust a lot of people to help me decide what is important and what I need to focus on. We do a lot of things. We're racing cars, we're owning race teams, we're broadcasting in the broadcast booth for NBC, writing children's books, and the list goes on and on. I mean, there's so many things that we get involved in and have our hands in, and you just sort of have to balance the time between what you really are passionate about and spending enough quality time with your family, right? Yeah. And making sure you're giving them what they need and being with them and getting, you know, making sure you're developing those relationships. Those girls are so young. Isla and Nicole are 5 and 2 years old, and you want to be in their life every day, every minute, helping them, impacting them. And so that's a tough challenge. And I think the older you get, the more you strip away things that aren't passionate for you, right? And you want to work on things that you love, mm-hmm. and you want to do things well, right? And sometimes you have to stop doing some things you like to do, right? In a professional sense, you have to say, man, I really love doing this job, but where it sits in the, you know, where it sits in the priority list maybe is not as important, and you have to make some difficult decisions. But mm-hmm. hey, I'm glad to have opportunity. I'm thankful, and we're managing it well.
So good, you sure are.
Yeah.
And you're such a doting father, 2 beautiful little young girls, like you said. I stalked your Insta a little, so I saw everybody could just see. What are some things you learned from your dad about parenting?
I think that my dad influences me a little bit as a parent, and my mom does too. My sister, my wife, me and my wife Amy communicate quite a bit about parenting practices, right? And what we find parenting to be really challenging at times, and so we talk about it. She says, you know, I think we could have done this in this situation, or I would have preferred you do this in this situation. And so we're pretty upfront about it. You might get your feelings hurt a little bit, you know, but it's best to make sure when, you know, you're learning and you're improving as a parent, and the next time the same situation comes up, you handle it in a better way, and a way where your partner's proud and happy the way, you know, happy with how you're doing things. And so we give each other a little feedback from time to time, share our opinions about things that we're learning in the world about parenting, and things we like that we see other parents do. And so I think you just got to be malleable, you know, you got to be able to go with the flow and change and accept that you're not perfect, and you know, always try to improve as a parent, and not worry so much about being imperfect. That's probably my problem, is that I worry about being imperfect and missteps that I make in teaching moments with my kids. And try, you know, I definitely, when I became a dad, I didn't come with this, you know, it didn't come with this guidebook, or I didn't have this big toolbox full of information to just be this perfect dad right out of the gate. So I certainly, in very important teaching moments, may have not hit a grand slam, but you know, try not to worry too much about not always, you know, fulfilling or living up to this sort of idea that you have as being a father. And your kids are going to be fine. You know, I worried, you know, about how they would interact with kids in class, mm-hmm. and going to school. I was going to kindergarten, and I was worried about how that might affect her. And I'll be honest, her being in school, being in a classroom with all these other kids, has been probably the most that's helped her progress so much in the past few months that she started kindergarten. She's grown so much as a person. She's changed so much, her personality and everything, and in great ways that I would have never expected. And I was worried to death when she mm-hmm. got out of the car and went into class for the first time. I was like, oh. what's going to happen to her there, you know? But it's turned her into this incredible young little 5-year-old kid.
Aww, yeah, that's so great. all right, let's talk racing.
Yeah, Well, I mentioned I'm a broadcaster for NBC, so I work in the booth for half of the season. Our season's split in half between two networks, so I work for NBC in the booth. I love doing that job. I'm at the racetrack. I'm going to watch the races anyways, so I feel very lucky to be able to have that opportunity to work in the broadcast booth. And I'm a huge fan of racing and a fan of what I'm watching, and I just kind of, I be that fan when I'm in the booth, and that's working really well for me so far. I do love to drive still, and I haven't quit driving entirely, and I ran a race just this past weekend at Bristol.
Good one.
Yeah, so I run I run at least once a year, maybe twice a year, and it's really out of, you know, I'm a little selfish that I want to compete and want to get back out there and see if I can still do it. But there's also that opportunity to remind myself of what a driver's dealing with inside the car and thinking about, and the processes that a driver goes through mentally throughout the race, so that when I go in the booth, it's fresh and I can pull from that information immediately, quickly. And I feel like the further I get removed from my racing career, the harder it is for me to be an analyst for our sport. So staying in the car keeps me current.
Keeps you fresh.
I do think that. And so we had a really good race this past weekend. I'm reminded every time I compete how great and talented the other drivers are. I think that's helpful too, to know that like they are great at what they do. But I ended up leading some laps. We led about 47 laps this past weekend. Things were going great. We had a little electrical fire that happened in the car. It's a, you know, just kind of odd, rare thing. It was a brand new car, and there's kind of a new car bug issue that we didn't foresee. And luckily, I was able to get out with no problems. I don't have any injuries or anything, but it was a very touch-and-go moment there inside the car when I look down and the floorboard's on fire, and I'm like, oh, well, I guess we're going to have to stop.
Oh, God.
So luckily, I get out. We get the car back to the shop. We figure out what the problem is. We understand how to not have that problem again. We'll clean this car up. We'll rebuild it, and I'll take it back and race it again in a month in Miami. So I'm looking forward to that.
Talk about resilience.
Yeah.
How do you maintain that, like, not freaking out? you know what I mean? Like, how do
You do freak out. I was in the car, saw a little smoke. I'm driving around. I'm running in really well, running up in the top five. And I see a little smoke, and I'm smelling some things burning. And I'm thinking, you know, what could that be? I'm trying to figure it out with what limited information I've got. And then I felt that pinch of the fire burning my suit and burning me, right? It gets hot. It's like getting too close to the fire. Getting too close to a campfire, and I felt it warm, and I looked down and I see a fire. I'm like, all right, I don't need to be foolish here. This could get really bad if I don't stop. So come down pit road and stop, get out. They you know, fire marshals handled the fire, and I had some burns on the suit, but I was perfectly fine. But to be honest with you, in that very quick process, you know, very quick sort of process, I did freak out. Like, I was freaking out. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, hopefully this fire doesn't get worse. Let me get to the pits quickly. Let's get this taken care of. I mean, I'm just assuming as soon as I pull to a stop, the fire is going to grow really quickly. Because when the car is at speed, there's a lot of air moving around, and that can temper the fire somewhat. And as soon as you stop a burning car, the fire spreads or grows really quickly. And so that was my only concern, was like getting somewhere fast and getting out of the car as quickly as possible.
Has becoming a dad and having a family changed racing at all for you?
It has. It's a bit of a tug of war, to be honest with you, between, you know, not racing and then wanting to race so that they know racing. And, my girls would, if I never drove another race car again, my girls would look at my career knowing that was something that happened before they were born, and not be able to really understand what it was like to experience me as a race car driver. And I believe it feels selfish to want to go to the racetrack and race so that your kids can experience it, right? So they can experience you doing that job when, you know, I'm going to be 49 this year, and I might as well, you know, I've done everything I wanted to do. There's really nothing else for me personally that I would love to achieve, and I've been very fortunate and lucky, but there's part of me, I'm selfish and I enjoy it and I want to do it and I have fun doing it, but there's also part of me that wants my kids to experience it and connect that part of my life to their reality, right? So I was, you know, they can say, I do remember going to the track and dad racing, and now I can go back and look at pictures of him and really kind of put myself in that, you know, that part of his life and maybe understand what that part of his life was like. And so I raced for about 20 years before they were born. And I will probably race for, I don't know, less, maybe half a dozen more years at the most.
Good.
One time a year for them to sort of be able to go to the track and see what that's like. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Was that what it was like for you when you were little?
I was in love with racing as a kid, you know, and I thought it was just so grand. I was just, couldn't get enough of being at the racetrack, and I wanted to explore every inch of the facility. And I had a group of friends, other kids my age, that we, as soon as you got to the track, you sought each other out, and you just had this, what are we gonna do? Let's go eat some junk food. Let's go over and look. Let's go watch practice from over here. Now let's move over here and watch the cars. And we wanted to see every vantage point, you know. And we walked all over pit road, touching and looking and checking all the race cars out. And it was a blast as a kid, you know, running up into the haulers and eating all the candy and. It was really, really a great time. And so, I certainly want my girls to know what it's like to be at a racetrack and what kind of fun can be had, what kind of enjoyment they can have from being there and watching the race.
Cool. What's the biggest tip you've learned, third generation legend, your grandpa, your dad,
yeah,
from them about racing?
I think the one thing that I probably learned from my grandfather and my dad, it's not really a lesson that I learned. It's more about a mindset. They were very driven, motivated, determined. The look on their face, you know, when you see images of them, they just have this, they're so focused in their gaze, right? And so that's how they were mentally at all times. When Dad was at the racetrack, it was business. And he was almost, you know, kind of walked around with this really sort of stern, determined sort of effort in everything. And there were some light moments for sure, but when he climbs into the car, he just sort of changed. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is motivating for me. When I'm behind the wheel of the car, I expect a certain performance. I expect a certain type of effort out of myself. And so, yeah, their approach to racing and driving has been an inspiration for me for every lap I run. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of pressure that you feel from the outside world, but most of the pressure that you feel is what you put on yourself. And the Earnhardt name is you know, you feel like a responsible for carrying on that legacy and keeping that name to a certain standard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You sure have.
Thanks.
Good for you.
Yeah.
I have goosebumps. What's your worst pet peeve from other drivers when you're on the track?
That's a great question. That's a good question. I think that the worst pet peeve in racing is what they call mirror driving. So if you're trying to pass a car and he, you know, generally when I race, I look out the windshield and where I'm going 95% of the time. Now we have mirrors in the car and one little side mirror right here to look down the side of the car. You check those from time to time to see where everybody's at and just understand whether you're pulling away from the car behind you or he's gaining on you. And so when you run down another car and you're catching another driver, you can tell they start to look in the mirror more. And they're paying less attention to where they're going, and they're looking in the mirror to see where you are, and they're trying to block you, right? And that is so frustrating because you run them down. You're faster than they are. You want, you know, if it's early in the race, you certainly don't want them to make it a difficult, hard time to get around them, but they can. They can really make it frustrating. And when they look in the mirror, and you can see them sometimes looking in the mirror, you can see their eyes. But you can tell they're trying to block you. They're going everywhere you are, trying to go on the racetrack to keep you behind them. And that really can be very frustrating.
do you go fast when you're at home? What's your home driving like?
My home driving. So driving on the highway for me has changed over the years. I was always going fast when I was younger. In a hurry everywhere I went. Speeding down the roads and not being very responsible with my driving. But I think as you get older, you sort of realize that, you know, you don't have to run wide open everywhere you go. You know, you don't have to hustle and race to every stop. And I would always, I have to really work to manage my anxiety or my my nerves, especially when I'm going somewhere to do something, any kind of work-related, you know, activity. And if I'm rushing to get there, I'm sort of working myself up for no reason, right? And I'm sort of building up this sort of anxiety and hustle and panics, you know, sort of temperament inside me, right? And so I've learned to just like take it easy. Just when you get there, you get there. Mm-hmm. Everything's gonna be fine. Okay, if you're a little late, you can apologize. No big deal.
That's so interesting.
And so, yeah, now I take my time driving. Amy, my wife riding with me, she'll tell me. We'll get in the road. So driving a car on the highway is like a great time to start like catch up on things. You never take the time when you're home to sit down and go, hey, what's going on with you? What are you doing? What's your plans tomorrow? What are the kids doing this weekend? None of those things, right? And so when we get in the car and we're driving somewhere, I'm like, man, hey, let's talk about this, that, and the other. What's on your calendar? This is what's on my calendar. I've got to go do this. And I'm just sitting there talking away, and she's like, hey, can we speed it up a little bit? You're going like 5 miles an hour below the speed limit. The cars are going by us. Can we just get to where we're going? And I'm like, this is a great time to just catch up. Okay, no problem. So she's always kind of reminding me that I need to drive a little faster.
That's so funny. Yeah. I love it. What's something you want to do that you haven't done yet?
I think for me is traveling. Me and my wife are really anxious to go overseas. We went to France this past year, been to Germany a couple times, but I've never been to England, where my mother's surname is from. I'd love to go to England and sort of track down. I'm into genealogy and my family's history and trying to figure out, you know, where the G family, which is my mother's side, where they originated from, and go there, right, and experience that. That would be great to do at some point. I'd love to go to Italy. Of course, you know, there's all kinds of places in the world that would be amazing to see. So just trying to push yourself to go do those things, take action, right? Yeah. We talk about it all the time, and we need to take action and go make it happen.
And of course, you have an awesome podcast.
Yes, yeah. I love podcasting. I love creating content. Obviously, creating content has like become the thing over the past decade. It's really a great way to engage with people and keep people updated on what you're up to and what's important to you, what matters to you. And podcasting is a great way for you to control the message, right? Control your narrative. And so that's been fun. And it's also helped me in the booth. I was never a journalist. I did not know the first thing about trying to interview somebody on a subject. And I've been in plenty of interviews myself, and I've been around people that I admire that I think are great at it, but wouldn't know the first thing about it. So, you know, podcasting has been a great trial by fire in learning to interview people, becoming a better speaker, articulating better, and I think it's helped me in the booth a lot.
And you're a fantastic interview.
Well, thank you.
What other hobbies do you do? What do you like to do when you're not working? I have a million jobs.
Yeah. Well, I don't only get to race in a real car once a year. So I do love to jump in a simulator and basically for most people, it's a video game. But I race online in iRacing, which is a lot of fun. iRacing to me is probably the most realistic way to understand what racing a car is like from the comforts of your own home. And so I do that quite a bit. I've worked with that company for about 20 years to try to develop their software and get it as realistic as possible, and that's a lot of fun. I love being in outdoors, being with my girls, you know, on a 95 degree day, go down and let them play in the creek and set a lawn chair down on the side of the creek and watch them just play, you know. And I love the beach. We have a house on the coast of the Carolinas that we love to go spend some time sitting on the beach and watching the girls enjoy that is amazing. And I'll be honest with you, like my job as a broadcaster is like a hobby. It's not a real job to me. It doesn't, I mean, like I said, I'm going to watch the races anyways. I'm a fan. Most of the things that we do on a professional side are fun passion projects. I own a race series called the Cars Tour, which is kind of it's a grassroots level racing. I'm very passionate about that, and that takes up a lot of my free time. I've dedicated a lot of my personal time to projects like that, and so that's been great. And I'm pretty much maxed out. I really am. I don't know that I can put anything else on the plate. I don't want to take anything else away from my family, so it's kind of where we are right now is I'm in a good place.
What's your favorite music?
That's a great question. I was talking to a friend of mine last night, a musician, about this, and I am a big pop punk fan, and so one of my favorite bands is A Danger Summer. It's a pop punk band from the last decade and a half. So I listen to a lot of that country music from any decade, 70s, 80s, 90s, and current. Yacht rock, from all rock really, from late 70s to early 80s. The stuff that you were listening to riding around in the back of your mom's car, all of those songs that connect you to your childhood, immediately take you back to the house you lived in or wherever you were spending a lot of time. I love nostalgia and being sort of, I love anything that like creates, brings back a memory. Mm-hmm. I love that. So that type of music, rock music and popular, rock music from the late 70s and early 80s is something that I'm always going to be good with.
Favorite comfort food?
My favorite comfort food. All right, so anything that has buffalo sauce on it. I love buffalo sauce. And so I use it as a dressing on salad. I know it's crazy. But it's a change up. But I love buffalo sauce, so buffalo chicken wings, and I can put that on a lot of things and enjoy it. But pizza, my kids, our girls are into pizza, and I love smoking barbecue, so brisket, ribs, I love ribs, so have to be careful there, but I love the challenge of smoking barbecue, because honestly, it's really similar to going and racing, so you spend days preparing this car, getting it ready, right, setting it up and tuning the car, and then you load it up and take it to the racetrack, and then in barbecue, if you're going to do a brisket, you spend almost a whole day like prepping the brisket before it ever goes on the smoker.
Do you do that?
Yes. Oh. And so that's kind of the fun part. It's like it's silly, but you have this toolbox with all the sauces and all the, the injection and everything you're going to do to try to make this brisket great, right? And it might be great, just like a race car. It might run great, it might not. you spend about a day and a half getting this brisket ready, and then it goes on the smoker, and that's like an 8-hour process. Wow. And very casual and fun. You can have friends around, and then the end product, there's this moment where you're about to feed your family or your friends where they might not like what they you don't know whether this brisket is good or not, right? What kind of critics are you going to have when they start eating the meal you've made and you spent 2 days on, right? So that's there's some anticipation, much like in racing.
Awesome. Yeah. How do you decompress?
When I raced full time, I had so much adrenaline after the race that I wouldn't go to sleep till probably 2 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And so I would go home and maybe grab a cold drink and just catch up on the internet or social media and watch music videos or whatever, right? And eventually I'd kind of calm down and slow down and all right, I'm ready for bed. I'm tired. I'm ready to go to bed. But for me, my happy place is under an umbrella on the beach, next to a cooler, with my little girls building a sandcastle or me burying them in the sand, whichever. I'm great, and some yacht rock playing on the radio. That's perfect for me.
Yeah. What's in the cooler? favorite cocktail?
Yeah.
I didn't ask that one.
Well, I like, we actually have a cocktail me and my wife have been working on called High Rock Vodka. Yeah. Oh, and so that's
something that he forgot to tell us.
That's been out for a couple of years. High Rock Vodka is, we think it's the best out there. And we've had some, we've won a lot of awards. They've been taking High Rock across the country and competing competitions, and it's been doing incredibly well. So the product itself is really, really good. We're working with a group in Gatlinburg, Tennessee called Sugarland, so they know what they're doing. We don't buy it from someone else and bottle it and brand it. We make it ourselves in-house, and so it's incredible. And so we've had a lot of fun with that, but either vodka and orange juice. My dad's favorite drink was a screwdriver, so that was, you know, I can always go with that or a cold beer.
Nice. Yeah. What's something no one knows about you?
Well, I always go to this for some reason, but you were asking me about music. Me and my sister used to go on these long road trips to visit my mother in Norfolk, Virginia. She lived up there for about 20 years, and so we'd drive the 6 hours to Norfolk, and the best part was Kelly's driving, and I'm just going through our CD case and playing all these songs, right? And I really became a huge Barry Manilow fan on one trip. And so, you know, it's you and your sister. And somebody was asking me the other day, it's like, what songs in your library that would be probably one you might be embarrassed about? And I don't know that I'm embarrassed about it, but I think people would be surprised at how much Barry Manilow's in my catalog. So,
what is Barry, your favorite?
Barry was awesome, man.
Yeah, I love
Can't
Barry.
Smile Without You. I mean, Copacabana, I think, is one of his songs. Uh-huh. I can't remember. I just loved his music. And again, it like reminds me of my childhood. Mm-hmm. And he was like a massive hit in the late 70s, early 80s, always on television. I love music. I listen to music all the time. So I would say some of the things people would be surprised to know about me is some of my musical taste.
Awesome. Yeah. I love it, love it, love it. Since this is Life Minute, any last life advice that you would give?
You know,
you gave us a lot of good ones already.
I know. Well, I would say life is short, you know. I think becoming a dad in my 40s, and now I'm about to be 49, getting close to the big 5-0. I lost my mother in the past couple of years.
There's
been a lot of other things, life events, right, that will remind you of just how brief your time on this earth really is. And so I think I wish I would have appreciated that earlier. You know, I'm glad I've got it figured out now, and I'm making the most out of it every day, and the time I'm with my family, really appreciating that moment and that time. And, you know, when I'm on the couch and the girls come over there and want to give me a hug, I cherish every single hug, right? And so I think I wish I would have realized all of that much sooner and when I was much younger in life to sort of take advantage of every day, living every day to its fullest. And not laying around lazy and putting everything off till tomorrow. So that's been something that I think I'm getting better at.
Mm, yeah. You're certainly not lazy. Mm. I don't think you're ever lazy.
Yeah, sometimes.
But that makes you who you are, to have that drive. What drives you?
What drives me? I think my girls, yeah. Mm. I think I'm motivated now to go do and go be great by my children. Mm. You know, and my wife is certainly somebody who I want to make proud and certainly somebody who I want to impress. I think that's a good challenge every day, is trying to make sure she's happy with who you are and what you're doing and the choices you're making. So I lean into that. I lean into making sure that she's happy with what I'm thinking and my approach to everything. But my girls really are easily the most motivating factor in my life.
Mm. We're lucky to have you. Yeah. You're such a beautiful person.
I appreciate that.
Thank you so much.
It's been great. I've enjoyed the conversation. Thank you for having me.
Me too. Such an honor to have you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.